Now we're holding on static tests on the bays, the last line of the narrowest lines, the 14 lines from the bottom. We learned yesterday that Ramyosi had said that, so we had the Tanakama had said that the Lechem Aponim has to constantly be on the Shulchan, and therefore as they're removing the old one, they have to be sliding in the new one, so that the Shulchan is not without Lechem Aponim for even a moment. Then Ramyosi had said in the Mishnah, no, that's not necessary. They could take off the Lechem Aponim at one point, and later in the day put on the Lechem Aponim, and that's fine, that's still considered Tumah. So the Gemara says, so we have the Gemara started by bringing a brisa that's just lefanai tamid means the shulchan should not be left overnight without lechem aponim. So now the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi, midvarav shor Rav Yosi nilmud. From what Rav Yosi is saying, that he's saying that the word tamid doesn't have to be 24/7. It can be as long as it's done during sometime during the day. We can learn from that. Where afilu loshana adam al perak echad shachris or perak echad arvis, if a person were to learn Torah for only one section in the morning and one section in the evening, then kiyum mitzvah lo yomosh asefer haTorah zamipicha, then he would be mekayim with that mitzvah that the words of this Torah should never leave your mouth. So in other words, it's not necessary when we say that you should be learning Torah by day and by night. It would come out from this that it's not literally necessary for it to be yom and balayla. It's fine if it's only some of the time. The Chofetz Chaim of Zevach Torah talks about, I mean, so what exactly are we talking? First of all, it comes out according to the Yosi that it comes out according to the Chachamim, a person really would have to be learning Talmud. But look, I mean, if this person is working for a living, then of course he has to just because he can't learn all the time. And if he can learn all the time, then why would Rabbi Yosi say that he's getting away with Perakath and Shachas, Perakath and Adavis? So the Chofetz Chaim explains in Zevach Torah, fine. Of course, from the point of view of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, it depends how much time a person has available. But when a person is potter from that, because he's busy working for a living or whatever, what does he need? Is he mekayim this mitzvah of La Yomush? The Gemara at this point is assuming that these words La Yomush constitute a mitzvah. We'll revisit that later. Is that in fact that he's kevei itim, and that's enough? And according to Reb Yosi, yes, and according to the Rabbanan, he's still not being mekayim that. So fine, he's not able to on his Shachmana Patre, but he still wouldn't. So we still wouldn't say that he's actually being mekayim it according to the Chachamim by learning only a little bit of time during the day, during the morning and the evening. So the Gemara brings Amar Rav Yochanan Mishum Rav Shimon Yochai, and in this connection, Rav Yochanan says in the name of Rav Shimon Yochai, going even further, Afilu Lo Kara Adam Al Kriyishma B'Shachas V'Arvis. Even if a person only says Kriyishma in the morning and in the evening, Kiyam Lo Yomush, then with that minimum amount, he's Mekayim the Mitzvah Lo Yomush, the Torah, the words of Torah should not leave your mouth, because in other words, because Kriyishma is words of Torah after all. So even though the Chiddush is, even though it's a mitzvah of its own, you're not doing it specifically for the sake of Talmud Torah, nevertheless Rav Yochanan is bringing from Rav Shimon Yochai that nevertheless a person is Yotzer with that. Now, an interesting point in that regard is that Rav Shimon ben Yochai himself is the one who says in the Gemara Brachas, he's the one we know famously when he and his son Rav Elazar came out of the cave after 12 years. They couldn't tolerate that people are working for a living. I'm talking people are not learning Torah all the time like they did. And it took a year of them being in the cave for Rav Shimon to realize, okay, listen, you know, people have to make a living. But even so, Rav Shimon points out in the same Rav Shimon ben Yochai points out in the Gemara in Brachas that you know what, if people are busy working for a living and plowing and planting, and we have a Torah Matahei Olea, what's going to be with the Torah? A person has to make Torah Osei Umnosei. And the Gemara mentions over there, Rabbi Shmuel, this is the reason the Gemara says many people tried to follow Rabbi Shimon, and it didn't work out. The general way for most people is to follow Rabbi Shmuel, Hanig Mehen Midas Derecharetz. You work for a living in the normal way, and then you set aside time for learning when you're not busy. Here, all of a sudden, Rabbi Shimon Yochai is saying that's enough to say Krishma in the morning and in the evening, and you're already Yotze. As far as a matter of halacha, it's only b'shas tchach. Of course, normally a person has to learn. But anyway, you do have the question of how is what Rav Shimon is saying consistent with what he says there. So in fact, Rabbi Akiva Egon, Gurion HaShas, refers to a shach in Yeridaya that says that in fact, for that reason, it shouldn't say Rav Shimon ben Yochai over here. The correct girsa would be Rav Shimon ben Yochai Tzadok, who was one of Rav Yochanan's Rebbeims. So Rav Shimon ben Yochai, in fact, would not say that you can get away with Kriyishma Shachos Faravis, rather Rav Shimon ben Yochai Tzadok, a later Tano or the Amorah would be saying that. On the other hand, they're on the Foshim. And the Tosfos HaRosh in Beirin Brachas explains that Rav Shimon is saying you have to only learn Torah. That's the proper way to do it. Yes, from the point of view of the mitzvah, the technical mitzvah of Talmud Torah, you would be Yotzer with Kriyas Meshachos Ha'avos. But he's saying that it's not. But he's saying that that's not the right way to do that. Then you could also talk about the Choyt Nosan talks about Yisrael Oysen with Tzernish HaMokim versus not, when the Jewish people are behaving as Hashem wants, then as the Gemara says over there, their malacha, their farm work and other kinds of work gets done by others, by Goyim, then they can be learning Torah all the time, as opposed to when we're living in a time when Ein Oysen with Tzernish HaMokim, and we have to work for a living, so then look, Reb Shimon will have to live with the fact that most of that people have to work for a living, and very few people are able to reach Tzernosim Nosay, and now he'll say that in that case, a person is Yotzer with even Kriyash Mashach, and Kriyash Ma'arvis. Okay, now the Gemara continues. The Dabrazer also Oimer Dismay Ame Ha'aretz. However, you're not allowed to say this in front of Ame Ha'aretz, because Ame Ha'aretz, so they're going to think, well, in that case, then I'm Yotzer with Kriyashma in the morning and the evening, and they're not going to bother learning Torah. And actually, Rashi says, in particular, he's not going to bother sending his children to learn Torah. So like this, he might think, you know what, fine, I myself, I'm older, I'm not able to transform my life like that. Not everybody is Reb Akiva who can still learn Torah at 40, but fine, at least I should send my children to Cheder that they should have a chance at becoming Tamil Chachamim. But if he hears this point that you can be Yotze, Sakhla Sabbath, well then why should I bother? Why should I bother paying tuition? Why should I have the kids out of my house and unavailable to help me, etc.? So therefore, so we're saying, don't say this time they are honest. On the other hand, the Rava, Omar Rava says on the contrary, mitzvah lo'omri b'fnei Ame Ha'aretz. It's a mitzvah to tell it over to Ame Ha'aretz. They'll realize that, look, if a person gets such a tremendous schar, the pasuk continues. After it says, la'yomosh sefer ha'torah zemipicha, the pasuk says, l'man tafliachas d'rachecha, so that Hashem says, so that you will be successful in your ways. So this way, the Ame Ha'aretz will think to himself, you know what, if even for Kriyishma, a person gets such a tremendous reward, how much more so if he learns Torah more of the day, kolayim, and that it's a much greater schar, so therefore, but that will motivate him to send his kids to Lulu. Then Rashi brings another explanation. The Ame Ha'aretz will realize to themselves like this. Well, if a person can be Yotzer Talmud Torah with only Shema in the morning and the evening, then why are the Chachamim sitting and learning all day? Why indeed are they not to just saying Kriya Shema and then doing other things? So he'll realize for that, it must be, they're doing it because there's tremendous Shema involved, and again, therefore, that will motivate him to want to learn Torah. To want to learn Torah more, or if he can't himself, at least to send his children for it. So therefore, Sa'adarabah, it's a mitzvah to say it to them, and that way it'll motivate them to realize the importance of Torah. So the Gemara continues in this vein. Shah ben Doma ben Achosa shall be Shmuel or shall be Shmuel. Ben Doma, who was a nephew of Rabbi Shmuel, asked Rabbi Shmuel as follows. His full name is Rabbi Elazar ben Doma, but the Gemara sometimes calls him just ben Doma like you. So he asked his uncle, Rabbi Shmuel, Kugoinani Shalamati Kola Torah Pula. What about somebody like me who has learned the entire Torah? Now, okay, it's impossible to learn the entire Torah, but he means, in other words, he knows everything that he's supposed to at this point of Torah. He knows all the halachas, he knows all the everything. So, ma'lum with chokhmas yavonis. Would I be allowed to take time out of my day to learn chokhmas yavonis? Now, we learned earlier in the Masechta about Chochmas Yevonis. We had the story when Yerushalayim was under siege, and a guy used Chochmas Yevonis to signal to the besiegers that if you keep on sending up animals for the Korban Tomid, then you'll never defeat them. And so they sent up a pig, and we had the whole story over there. And at that point, we said the Chachamim made a gzera that not to learn Chochmas Yevonis. Now, so then how is Ben Doma asking whether he can learn Chochmas Yevonis if the Chachamim said that there's a gzera against learning it? So Tosfos over here refers to a discussion of those earlier in the Masechta, in that sugya on the subject. First, Tosfos says that, first of all, it might be that this Ben Doma is Kodesh L'Malchus. The Gemara mentions at the end of Soita that people who are Kodesh L'Malchus, people who have to deal with the Goyish governments all the time, they need to know this kind of thing in order that they should be able to talk to the government to members of the government as equals. So they would be allowed. So maybe Ben Doma is wondering the same thing. Now we're going to say in our Gemara that Rabbi Shmuel tells him no. Now the Gemara mentions in Baba Kama and in Soita that the family of Rabbi Gamliel, members of the family of Rabbi Gamliel, that the Chachamim did give them a heter for that. So the answer would be, Tosfos says that for them it was absolutely necessary, for Ben Doma it wasn't. He could manage to be able to deal with the government without that. Tosfos then says, one wants to say that maybe it was before the Gzeirah, maybe Ben Dama and Rabbi Shmuel lived before that Gzeirah, but Tosfos says it doesn't work out. Chronologically, the Gzeirah was made, the civil war that we talked about that led to this Gzeirah was the later Chashmonaim, two of the Chashmonaim brothers, Rabbi Shmuel and Ben Dama are much later at the end of the second Beis Hamikdash, at the end of the second Beis Hamikdash, or even afterwards. In any case, the point is, there's also a point, in other words, that maybe there's different types of Chochmas Yevonis. Some of the Farshim explain the Chochmas Yevonis that the Gemara outlawed over there was, as we had over there, a type of sign language, a type of something like that, that people could use to send coded messages, as that guy in the story did, to tell them, to give a message to the besiegers. But then, yeah, more generally, Chochmas Yevonis means the various sciences and arts, the various sciences and arts and philosophies and whatnot. So those were not involved in that story. So therefore, Ben Dama is asking, maybe there's a heter to learn those, and he asks his uncle whether that's the case, given that he's already learned Kol HaTertikol. Rabbi Shmuel answered by quoting him the following pasuk that we've been discussing all along. This book of the Torah should not go away from your mouth, should not leave your mouth. You should be delving into it and meditating into it by day and by night. So he tells his nephew, say of day, Shoshain Elohim and Ayyim Velim and Alayla. Go see if you can find a time that's neither day nor night. And then you can learn Chochmas Yevonis then, but in other words, otherwise not, because otherwise you're supposed to be learning Torah Yom and Valayla. So in other words, Rabbi Shmuel would be arguing with what we said before, that it's enough Perek Echad Shachos and Perek Echad Arvis, or even Kriyas Shema Shachos Arvis. So he would say that no, you really do have to be learning Torah every spare moment that you have, and therefore there's no time for Chochmas Yevonis. So you don't really have time for that. It is brought about various early Yisrael, for example, when they needed to learn. It's brought about the Ramban, for example, that he needed to know a certain amount of Goyisha knowledge. First of all, he worked as a doctor and for his parnassa, so he needed to learn that, but he also needed to learn, he dealt with the government all the time, and he had to know certain things that they need to know for the purpose. So it's brought on him that he would learn those things while he was in the bathroom. I think they tell about it in a similar vein. They tell about the Rebbe and his brothers, that they would challenge each other to see how many foreign languages they could learn. That's how, even living in Russia, that's how the Rebbe picked up English and several other languages. You can always hear when you hear on dollars and in sikhas and whatever, when the Rebbe speaks in those languages, he has a very heavy accent, but it's intelligible because he learned it as a child from dictionaries. But they say also that they would do that while they were in the bathroom. However, the Gemara says, Upliga did Rav Shmuel ben Achmi. However, though, what we're saying all along, that the words LaYomosh Sefer HaTorah HaZem Epicha constitute a mitzvah, and therefore, so you have a minimum amount of it, Perek Achad Shachos, Perek Achad Arvis, or even less, Kriyishma in the morning and in the evening, and now we have Rabbi Shmuel saying that no, it means all the time. So all of them are taking it as a given, that this is a mitzvah, that this is another possibility, and Sefer Yeshua is already not a time when new mitzvahs of the Torah can be given, but in other words, sometimes we have what's called mitzvah medivrei Kabbalah, we have divrei Kabbalah, we have words of Nevi'im, from which we derive a certain detail of a mitzvah. So there's a mitzvah of Talmud Torah, and then within that would be Vayomosh Sefer Torah Azam Epicha. So now, when we've been saying that, when Rabbi Shmuel is saying that it means all day, and even for that matter, when we had earlier the other Tanoim who held that it does mean at various times during the day, because not constantly, all of them, though, Upliga Rabbi Shmuel ben Achmeni, all of them are disagreeing with Rabbi Shmuel ben Achmeni, the Omer of Shmuel ben Achmeni, Omer of Yenison, Pasuk Zeh, Ein Eloich Choyva V'loy Mitzvah. This Pasuk is not giving us an obligation, and it's not giving us a mitzvah. A choiva would be something you absolutely have to do. A mitzvah would be something that it's good to do. It's neither of the above. The pasuk is not that. The bracha. Hashem saw Yeshua. This is right after Moshe had passed away, and Yeshua is now taken over as leader of the Jewish people. And Hashem sees that Yeshua, that words of Torah are very precious to him. Shenema, as we find that throughout Yeshua's throughout all the years in the Midbar, Umashorsi Yeshua ben Nun now Yomash Mitaycha Oil, that Moshe's attendant Yeshua ben Nun, young man, would not leave the tent, so he's constantly with his Rebbe Moshe Rabbeinu to learn Torah. Omalei Hakadosh Baruch Hu, so Hashem says to him, Yeshua Kolkach Aviv and Alacha Dibrei Torah, words of Torah are so precious to you. In that case, I give you a bracha La Yomash Seifah Torah Zani Picha. This book of the Torah will not leave your lip, will not leave your mouth. In other words, I'm giving you a bracha that you won't forget your Torah. So up until now, we were saying that the pasuk is giving us a choy or a mitzvah that there's a certain detail of how you're supposed to learn Torah. Now we're saying Reb Shmuel Bar Nachmani is disagreeing with all that and saying no, it's Hashem giving Yeshua a bracha. The Gemara continues more on the topic of Talmud Torah. Tonet Veda Bishmol Dibrei Torah Lo Yu Alacha Choyva. The words of Torah should not be a choiva to you. But you're not allowed to patter yourself from them. So what does this mean? It has a few different meanings. So Rashi says it means like this: the person is going to say, "I have a choiv, I have a debt. Okay, let me get rid of it. Let me finish it off and then get rid of it." A person should not take the attitude. For example, fine, I'll learn one section of Torah and that's it. I'm potter, because you're not allowed to patter yourself from it. You still have, in other words, So, was saying, which is consistent with what Rishmal himself had said before, don't think you learn a certain amount of Torah. Don't even think you're like Ben Dama and learned enormous amounts of Torah. And now you're potter. No, it's not just a choiva. It's more than that. You can't potter yourself from it. That's Rashi. Tosfos gives two other explanations. Number one is lo yu alacha choiva. Means that don't think that it's your exclusive thing to do. The fact is, a person does have to do other things. A person, most people, have to work for a panasa, for example. So don't make it a choiva, as in this is the only thing you have to do. On the other hand, don't think you can patter yourself from it and not learn Torah at all. You have to take a middle ground, in which case Rabbi Shmuel, over here, Tonet Veda Rabbi Shmuel, is being consistent with something that Rabbi Shmuel himself says in that Gemara in Brachas, where Rabbi Shmuel says that, look, the pasuk says, that means you have to be doing your regular agricultural business or whatever it is that you do for Parnassah, and then you have to learn Torah in between that. And meanwhile, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai had argued over there and said, then Torah mata heilah, that a person is supposed to be learning Torah constantly. So now Rabbi Shmuel would be consistent, according to his first explanation of Tosfos, with what he's saying over there. So yeah, you have to work for a living, so therefore you can't think that you should be learning Torah all the time. The fact is, you can't expect to, you can't earn money from learning Torah. Don't make them, as it says in Pirkei Avos, don't make them a spade to dig with. On the other hand, don't think you're completely potter, because the fact is you have to do the Asafa Zikonecha, and you also have to learn Torah. Then a third explanation, so Tosfos says, is don't think that you have a choiv to learn the entire Torah, but on the other hand, don't think that you're potter from it, in which case Rabbi Shmuel is restating what we had at the end of last week's Pirkei Avos, the end of Perek Beis, lo yalacha melacha ligmar, the work of learning Torah is not, you're not expected to complete it. A person is not going to learn the entire Torah, because the entire Torah is bigger even than the world, but they ain't not to ben firmly potter mimena, but you're not free to just patter yourself from it and say, in that case, I won't bother. You have to do whatever you can, and the Eibishter will make you successful in So that's another meaning of that they shouldn't be choiva and iyata rasha lift their asim from him. The Gemara continues there. What does it mean? A pasuk in Eiyov. This is one of the pasukim where Elihu is speaking to Eiyov and trying to help him put in perspective everything that he's been going through. So he says to him a pasuk. Even if Hashem has talked you into it because of a troublemaker, we're going to see, we have a simple meaning of the pasuk. The Gemara is going to darshan it much differently. So even if Hashem has convinced you to stay away from trouble, in other words, like not to do averus, rachav le'mutzak tachteha, there'll be a width that's not firm underneath it. Some of the various mephoshim on the pasuk explain in a poshita sense what does the pasuk mean, what exactly is Elihu telling Eiyov. Something to help put in perspective what he's been undergoing. The mephoshim will explain that it refers to that Eiyov is telling him you should know all of this was caused by the satan telling Hashem that you haven't been acting, so that maybe he needs to test you, and therefore that's why you underwent all of this. Of Achasischam and Pitzar, you were Hashem allowed himself, so to speak, to be convinced by the troublemaker, meaning the Satan. And there are different other explanations. Rashi over there explains that Hashem did you a favor with these Yisurim, Hashischa, that Hashem has kept you away. Hashem has convinced you to that, so to speak, that now you have to undergo these, and this way you won't suffer Gehenim, which is so. Which is a narrow opening, Rachav leMutzak Tachtah, and which has a wide opening, because Gehenim, so to speak, is wide, and leMutzak, and nothing spills out of it, anything that goes into Gehenim stays there. So that's another meaning of the pasuk. In other words, Elihu was telling Eve, as bad as you, Yisurim were, it saved you from Gehenim, which is much worse. So now Hizkiah is darshaning the pasuk as follows: Boyu Re'eish Shaloi Kamidas Hakadosh Baruch Hu Midas Vasa Vajam. Come and see that the way Hashem does things is not the way that human beings do. Midas Vasa Vajam, Adam Mesis, as Chaveri Midarches Chaim Midarches Misa. Usually, when you talk about a Mesis, I mean, you convince somebody. It's usually, for example, the classic case of Mesis is a person, for example, convinces somebody else to worship Avodah Zarah. But usually, in general, we use the word Mesis. It means somebody who convinces somebody to do something against their best interest. We have in this week's parasha, we have a mitzvah lifnei evil as sitin mikshor, where it means, for example, don't give him advice that's not in his best interest. Again, you have the case of a mesis. You have, for example, with the nachash, where Chama says hanachash ishiani, the snake convinced me, and it means the same thing that hashah and asasa mean basically the same thing. So the point is, in other words, so usually when you talk about a mesis, it's usually somebody convinces somebody to do something that's against his own interests, so not in his best interests. So the darkest mesis brings him from ways of life to ways of death. Hashem, on the contrary, is convincing a person to do something which will, without this convincing, he would have been in the ways of death, and now Hashem is telling him, instead, do something that will bring you to the ways of life. Shenema, this pasuk, the afasis from a pitzur, that Hashem is convincing you, asisva, from the same word as mesis, mi pitzur, from the narrow entrance, which, again, like Rashi said on the pasuk, mi gehenim shapiat tzar, Hashem is thereby saving you from gehenim, which has a narrow mouth. And why is its mouth described as narrow? Shashonet, sovereign the circle, so that the smoke remains in it. In other words, metaphorically, you can, Gehenim is full of smoke, representing how the Neshamas are the evil, the clippers, and whatever that attach themselves to a Neshama over a person's life are burnt off. So you have smoke over there, and then, so to speak, the smoke stays inside there and doesn't get out. So therefore, it's called Rachav, therefore, it's called Mipitzer, from a narrow mouth. Implying, in other words, that the smoke stays in there. Now, the Shem of Tomer, so therefore, Hashem is being macis you. Hashem is convincing you to not do that. Don't do things that are going to lead you to that. Instead, Hashem is telling you, let me get you to learn Torah, which thereby you will be saved from that pihatzar. Now, the Shem HaTomer Kishem Shapiat Sarakat Kulat Sarah. So you're going to say to yourself, okay, well, if the mouth is open, is it narrow, then maybe the whole thing is narrow. So in other words, it's not so bad to be in Gehenim. No, Talmud Lomar. Therefore, the Gemara brings a different posik. Now, we could have brought the posik, the continuation of the posik, says Rachav Lemutzak Tachtah, where it means it's wide and nothing spills out of it, which is how Rashi brings on the posik. But the Gemara. No, the Gemara does want to bring. The Gemara is going to now bring instead some psukim from a pasuk from Yeshaya that also refers to Gehenim and which tells us more about what Gehenim is all about, so that we have a better perspective, in other words, on what it is, and we know that that's not something where a person wants to be. So it continues. So he continues by quoting, instead of quoting the continuation of the pasuk from Eiv, instead he quotes a pasuk from Yeshaya. So Marashah says basically what the Gemara is doing is, since you have the pasuk repeat so Rahab and Mutzak Tachtel, the Gemara wants to bring another proof that Gehenim is, so to speak, wide. There's plenty of room in it. So Hashem HaTemachach Kishem Shapiat Sarakach Polot Sarah Talmud Lema, therefore pasuk in Yeshaya describes Gehenim Hemik Herchid. Hashem has made it deep and wide. Which is also talking about Gehenim over there.
V'shem atoim olam melech. Now, the pasuk in Yeshaya goes as follows. Ki oruch me'es mul tofta. Tofta, which is another name for Gehenna, has been prepared from beforehand. Me'es mul literally means from yesterday. Gam hi olam melech chuchan. It's also been prepared for the king. Hem ekirchim. Hashem has made it deep and wide. Midurasa esh ve'etzim harbe. There's a big bonfire of wood, of a fire and wood over there. Nishma Hashem kenachon gofris. The breath of Hashem is like a river of sulfur, which is burning in it. So it's a description of Gehenna. In Parshat Pshat, it's referring to the way that Sancheiriv and his army are going to be burnt by the Hashem's fire, but now the Gemara is doubting it about Gehenna. So the Shema Tamil Melach, so you might say, you know who Gehenna is for? That kind of wide, deep Gehenna is for a king. A king often means a Talmud Chacham. So therefore, a Talmud Chacham who stops learning Torah and goes off the Derech, then Gehenna is prepared for him. But how do you know it's for a regular person? Marsha explains it might actually mean, maybe it means Ochaz Melech Yehuda, who would have gone to Gehenna, except that Chizkiah, his son, was a tzaddik and then helped bring his father's neshama out of Gan Eden, out of Gehenna. So you might think then that it refers only to such a person. So Hashem Eternal Melech Loi Huchna. So you would argue that maybe it's not prepared for a king. Maybe it's only for regular people, but a person who learned Torah or a person who was a king or whatever is immune to it. Tamad Loi Melech Gamhi Melech Huchan. Therefore, the pasuk specifically says it was also prepared for the king. Don't think a Tamad Chacham is going to get out of it just because he learned Torah. If now he abandoned Torah, then he's going to wind up over there as well, and then you have the different other explanations. The Shema Terma Ein Ba'etzim, you're going to argue there's not a lot of wood in it, so therefore the fire will burn out quickly. Now, Tamar Lema, Medurasa Eish Ve'etzim Harbe, therefore the pasuk continues, its bonfire has a lot of fire and a lot of wood. The Shema Terma Zehu Schara, so you're going to argue, so is that the whole Schara of Torah, that it saves a person from Gehenna? Shouldn't there be a positive Schara for learning Torah as well? Tamar Lema, now we return to the pasuk in Iyov, and the end of the pasuk is V'nachas Shulchoncha Molei Doshen, the rest of your table, the resting of your table, will be full of fatness. In other words, that you will have a table in Gan Eden full of all kinds of riches and fatness as a Schara for learning Torah. So in other words, taking in that way, then, Elihu is telling Eev, you should realize how kind Hashem is to people. He convinces them, the Hesis, which again usually means Hasasa, which usually means convincing a person to something negative, and here Hashem is convincing a person to do the most positive thing, to learn Torah, and that way, A, he saves himself from Gehenna, and he, Hashem, gives him a great reward of a table full of fatness and juiciness. And then in between, we brought other psukim to show what Gehenna is exactly. Okay, so all of this was talking about the importance of learning Torah and the importance of not slacking off on it. Getting back now to the Mishnah that says, we said that normally they would distribute the Lacham Akonim on Shabbos, but we said if Yom Kippur came out on Shabbos, then they would distribute it on Motzei Shabbos, and the Kohenim would eat it then. And then we talked about, now here's another point, you have one of the Korbanos that's brought on Yom Kippur is a Chatas, which the Kohenim are supposed to eat. So normally the Kohenim, of course, can't eat on Yom Kippur. Normally Motzei Yom Kippur, they would cook it, and then they would eat it, but if Yom Kippur comes out on Friday, which it could in those days, then they don't have that option because they can't cook it on Shabbos. So what do we do with it? The Mishnah had said that the Bavliim would eat it raw. Which, by the way, I mean, you know, raw meat contains blood in it. Isn't that a problem? But according to strict halacha, if the blood hasn't moved out of where it was in the flesh before, then it's not a problem. Just cut open the blood vessels and things like that to drain where there's actual collections of blood. But other than that, then you can basically wash off the outside to get rid of any blood on the surface. And then you can cut open the veins and whatnot to drain out any blood that's there. And then you can eat the rest of it. And then you could, in fact, eat the rest of it raw. Without cooking or salting it or whatever. So the Bavliim would be. Who are these Bavliim? Amar Rav Babachana, Amar Rebechna, like Bavliim heim el Alexandriim heim. They're not actually people from Babel, they're actually people from Alexandria in Egypt. And with Turkish Sonin as a Bavliim, because there are people among the, there are Jews in Eretz Yisrael who hate the Bavliim,
meaning in particular, Rashi, Tosfos refers to a Gemara in Yuma, where Rish Lakish said to Rabbi Elazar, Rish Lakish was native to Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi Elazar had come from Babel, and Rish Lakish said, I don't like you people from Babel. If you had come up, if all the Jews from Eretz Yisrael, from Babel, had come up to Eretz Yisrael at the time when they were building the second Beis Hamikdash, then there wouldn't have had to be a Churban and another Golus. Only 42,000 and some Jews came from Babel, the rest of them stayed behind in Babel, so therefore, so the Bnei Eretz Yisrael held that against the people of Babel. So because the Bnei Eretz Yisrael hate or dislike the Bavliim, Kodanoisim Hashem Bavliim. Therefore, they would use the word Bavliim as a term to call out and to speak in a derogatory way about people they didn't like. So even though these people are actually from Alexandria, they would nickname them Bavliim, as in people we don't like. Tosfos points out, the fact is they are doing a mitzvah this way, the korban doesn't become nicer, but the point is, these are people who would eat raw meat during the year as well, which is a very uncouth and unrefined thing to do, and therefore they would nickname them Bavs. So therefore, again, these people were from Alexandria, but they call them Bavlian because they're acting like these uncivilized Bavlian in that. There is a different interesting explanation. Dodus HaRishonim brings from Josephus' histories that at one point there were some people from Babel. There was a very rough and tough group of Jews from Babel who were brought to guard certain areas of the borders of Eretz Yisrael. There were bandits over there. These guys were able to overpower and defeat the bandits and then make those areas safe. Eventually, over time, some of these Jews, originally from Babel, eventually some of them moved to Alexandria and Egypt. So now, what happened, now for generations, for hundreds of years already, there had been Jews living in Alexandria. It was one of the biggest Jewish communities in the world in those days. So now, what happened is, Zodos HaRishonim explains, when we say over here that they hated the Bavliim, what we mean is the people of Alexandria, the native Alexandrian Jews, looked down and hated on the Bavliim, again, as the newcomers, and they're uncouth and uncivilized and so forth. So they would continue to call them Bavliim, even though now they may have lived for a couple of generations. They and their ancestors may have lived in Alexandria, but the native Alexandrian Jews, whose roots in the city went back much further than that, they would look down on them and still consider them Bavliim, as in newcomers from Babel. So that would be, we don't mean then that the Bnei Eretz Yisrael don't like them, we mean that the Alexandrians would hate these Jews, and therefore they would continue to call them Bavliim because of where they originally came from. Well, the Gemara says, so again, these guys were rough and tough, and among other things, they would eat meat raw. So again, in this case, it helps, but this way, doesn't the korbanos don't become nicer, but still, as Tosfos points out, it's still a very uncivilized thing to do, and they would do that throughout the year as well, and they would do it in a way that makes them look like gluttons. So the Gemara of Tanya Nami Hochi, we learn similarly in Ebraisa, Rabbi Yossi, Omer Lo Bavliim Heim El Alexandrian Heim, they're not from Babel, they're from Alexandria, Omer Tosha Sonin Es Bavliim, because they, the people of Eretz Yisrael, or the people of Alexandria, as the case may be, because they hate the Bavliim, Koronosim Hashem Bavliim, therefore they would nickname anybody they didn't like, they would nickname them Bavliim. So Rabbi Yehuda tells him, Tanuach Dait, Hashem Nachta Daiti, may your mind be at ease because you put my mind at ease. What is it? Rashi says Rabbi Yehuda's family came from Babel. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda didn't like the idea that Mishnah is putting down the Bavliim and saying that they're uncivilized. So now, when we're told they're not really Bavliim, they're really Jews from Alexandria, so that made Rabbi Yehuda feel better. Another explanation, Dorus HaRishonim says that Poshit, because only a smaller number of Jews came from Eretz Yisrael, there remained a large Jewish community behind in Babel, and for hundreds of years they were also one of the central Jewish communities in the world, and therefore Rabbi Yehuda doesn't like the idea. That the Mishnah should be putting down the Bavliim like that, and therefore when he hears that they're not really from Babel, that really they're from Alexandria, and just their ancestors came from Babel, and that made him feel better. It means that the general run of Jews from Babel are not these kinds of uncouth and then gluttonous people. Okay. The Mishnah says, now, normally you put on the lachem aponim on Shabbos, on the shulchan, as we described in the previous Mishnah. You put on the bezichin with them. It stays on the shulchan. It stays on the shulchan for an entire week, and then they take it off. The following Shabbos. So now the Mishnah is going to talk about what happens if they did it on other days of the week. So the Mishnah says, Sidiris alechem b'Shabbos, if you put on the lechem aponin on the shulchan on Shabbos, like you're supposed to, v'esa bazichin la'achar Shabbos. But then you put on the bazichin after Shabbos, on Sunday or on some other day of the week, which you're not supposed to do. Now you have, so now, the hikdiris a bazichin b'Shabbos, If now you offered the mezuzah the following Shabbos, posel, so now the bread is posel because it's called mechuser zman. It hasn't been enough. It hasn't been on the shulchan long enough. Now the actual lechem has been on the shulchan long enough, but it has to go together with the mezuzah, and it hasn't. The mezuzah now have been on the table for only 6 days, and therefore it's no good. Now, later in the Mishnah, we're going to have examples where we can fix up the situation. Here, Rashi says we cannot fix up the situation because it's too late. Once the lechem aponim itself was placed on the shulchan, so that made it holy. Now you can't leave it. Now you can only leave it till the following Shabbos. Otherwise, it will become pasul with lina. If you were to leave it, so later in the Mishnah, we're going to have examples where you can leave the lechem on the shulchan for multiple Shabbos. But Rashi says that won't work in this case. because the lechem aponim itself was placed on the shulchan, and therefore it's too lenin, and therefore it became kaddish, and now if you leave it any time past the next Shabbos, it's going to become posel and sin, and it's too late. So therefore you have this. So therefore there's nothing you can do at this point. The bread is going to be posel, and you're not going to have lechem aponim that week. There's a parenthetical note in Rashi says because the bread was left there without bezichin, in other words, implying if it had been there with the position, it wouldn't be a problem. You could leave it on the shulchan multiple Shabbosim, but here where it was placed without position, then you can't do that. Different Gersois, whether those words belong in Rashi or not, in other words, is the fundamental problem just the fact that it was placed on the shulchan on Shabbos, and because of that, it cannot be left there more than one Shabbos, or is the problem because it was placed there on Shabbos without the position? So the bread becomes posel, and there's nothing you can do with it. The Rambam actually, when he brings this halacha, brings it even further. He says nifsal alechem ve'enei kodesh. He says the bread does not even have the kedusha of lechem aponim. Next, and the Mishnah continues. Ein chayavan aleim mishum pigul nos of the tomei. So if a person were to eat the bread, if the bread was made pigul, if he burnt the levona, having in mind that the levona itself or the lechem aponim was going to be eaten, chutz manei, which ordinarily would make it pigul, here that doesn't happen because the bread never became kaddish in the first place. The noser, or because of noser, the tomei, or if it becomes tomei because again it didn't have it never got its full kedusha as a guf, it got a kedusha to a certain extent because it was placed on the shulchan, but not enough to be chayav for these kinds of things, because you have to have the bezichin were offered properly, and here the bezichin were not offered properly because they were on the shulchan for only 6 days. Next, continues the Mishnah, Sidurus Alechem Vesa Bezichin B'Shabbos. What about the other way around? He put both the lechem upon him and the bezichin on there on Shabbos. V'Hikdurus Bezichin Ma'achar Shabbos, and then he offered the bezichin after Shabbos on Sunday. So Rashi explains it means actually the Sunday would actually mean the next day. If he had left them on there until after the following Shabbos, then it wouldn't be such a problem because after all it was placed properly. But here where he offered it sometime during the week, it was the Levonim was not on there a full week. So the same problem, the whole thing is possible. Ve'en chayav alem shum pigul noisa v'tameh, and a person is not chayav for eating it if it would have otherwise been pigul or noisa v'tameh. Now, another case, Sidurus Alechem Vesabazichim Achon Shabbos. What happens if he put them on after Shabbos? Now, unlike in the previous two cases, where he put on the first case, he put the Lechem upon him on Shabbos, and the second one, he put both the Lechem upon him and the Bazichim on Shabbos. Here, he put them all on during a week. The Hikdurus Abazichim B'Shabbos, if now he offered the Bazichim on Shabbos, Psula, it's also going to be possible because Mechus is man, because it hasn't been on the Shulchan, it hasn't been on the Shulchan long enough. Now Rashi takes out the word. Rashi takes out the word psula, because it's not so much that it's going to be posel, but rather that you have to do something. As the Mishnah is going to go on to say, you have to do something in order to fix up the situation, because it has to be on the shulchan. It has to be on the shulchan full 7 days, or really parts of 8 days, really, because you put it on one Shabbos and you take it off, and you take it off the following Shabbos. Another way of saying it, though, is that the word is, in fact, psula, and it means it's not matzah, the bread to be eaten.
Ketzad Yasa, how should you do that? If you put it on during the week, what do you do to prevent it from becoming posel? Now, unlike in the other cases, where, as we said, it's posel and there's no getting around it, here there is a way. Yanichena l'Shabbos haba, leave it on the Shulchan until the following Shabbos. Shafilu yala Shulchan yomim yamim ein v'kachlum, even if it remains on the Shulchan for many days, it's not a problem, meaning exactly that. In other words, as long as it was on there on Shabbos and was taken off on the following Shabbos, then it doesn't matter the fact that it was placed on there during the week. So therefore, so you can do that. So let's say, for example, this week is Parshas Achrei Mos Kedoshim. So let's say, for example, they put the Lachem Aponim on. Today's Tuesday of Parshas Achrei Kedoshim. If they were to put the Lachem Aponim and the Bezichin on the Shulchan today, so what we'd say is, if they were to take it off on Shabbos, then it would be possible. And this Shabbos, Parshas Achrei Mos Kedoshim, would be possible. What should they do? Leave it there until Shabbos Parshas Emor, and then take it off. And that's fine. Then it was on there on Shabbos of Achrei Mos Kedoshim. It will be on there. Being taken off the following Shabbos, Parshas Emor, and then we're good, and then we're back to normal, and we can continue from there. So the Gemara brings in this connection on Mishnah from Masechet Yoma, and is going to analyze it, and in the course of that analysis, we're going to bring up our Mishnah and discuss how this can work, that it can be considered that if it was on the Shulchan when Shabbos comes in, then it can be considered that it was placed on the Shulchan on Shabbos. We're going to discuss how that works. So the Gemara says, Tnanahos, and we learn in a Mishnah in Yoma, Omer lahem ha-mamuna, when it comes time, it's coming now. Now, much of Masechta Yoma is talking about, of course, the Avodah of Yom Kippur, but there are parts of it that are describing more generally how they would do it, the Avodah of every day. So there comes a point, and they're early in the morning, Omer lahem ha-mamuna, the Mamuna says to them, so the Mamuna in the Gemara there in Yoma, Rashi explains, the Mamuna is the Sagan, the deputy Kohen Gadol. Anyway, he tells them, Sura Uy Megiyas Man Shechita. Go out and see. Go up onto the roof or a wall or whatever and see if the time of Shechita and the Koman Tomid has arrived. Is it daylight yet? Because we're only Shechita Rabbanus during the day, of course. Im Hegiyah, if in fact they saw sunlight, Haroya, the one who was looking, the one who had gone up to the high vantage point, Oymer, he would say, Barkai, there's light in the sky. Matisya ben Shmuel says, he could say the entire eastern side is lit up until Chevron. In other words, we can see the Chevron is south of Yerushalayim, but in other words, there's not just one area of light in the eastern horizon. The light has spread so much that now you can see it all the way to the south, to Chevron. Ruhu Omehain, and the one on the roof says yes. The one there in Yuma discusses different ways of parsing this whole back and forth. First of all, who is Matisya ben Shmuel? So the Mishnah mentions, and there's a Mishnah in Shkolid that says that he was in charge of the pious. They had four times a day, they would make a pious, they would have a raffle like among the Kohenim to decide who does which avodah. So therefore, so he's there, because right after this, they're going to do the first pious to decide who's doing the various things for the Korban Talmud. So therefore, he would ask, not just was there a little bit of light in the sky, but he would ask, hey, Kol Pnei Mizrach. So there's one way, so Rashi over here explains that it means that he's not arguing with the Tanakhama. When he was there at the time when they're doing this, then he would ask. Then if the one on the roof says Barkai, then Matisya ben Shmuel would ask him, is it all the way? Do you see light all the way to Chevron? And once the guy answers yes, then they would go ahead with the next step and check the Korban Talmud. There are different other explanations in the Gemara and Yuma over there, and there were different other explanations among Mephoshim. It can mean that Matisya ben Shmuel is a Tana who's actually arguing with the Tanakama and saying it's not enough to just say Barkai, there has to be Heir Kofman Mizrach. And you also have different ways that the Gemara parses out the discussion over there. Is it that the guy says Barkai and Matisya ben Shmuel asks as a question, Heir Kofman Mizrach ad Shem Chevron? Is it lit as far as Chevron? And when the guy answers, hey, yes, then they would go ahead. Or the Gemara says another possibility is that it could mean, Matisya ben Shmuel says, hey, or Kol Pnei Mizrach, is the entire eastern sky lit? And the guy on top would ask, do you mean Ad Sheba Chevron? Do you mean that if you want to see that it's lit as far as Chevron? Ruhu Emehain, and Matisya would answer, yes, that's what I mean. And then the guy would answer yes or no to that. The Rashi brings from the Yerushalmi that the reason why Ad Sheba Chevron, why not any other place, to mention in order to evoke the schus of the others who are buried in Ma'aretz Machpelah and Chevron. So therefore, every morning, they would want to mention Chevron. So,
Now, the Mishnah continues, now, why do they need this whole rigmarole? Why not just, why do they need to go and see, up to the roof and see? One time, the moon rose in the middle of the night, and the Gemara points out in Yomar it was a cloudy day, so they couldn't easily tell the difference between the sunlight and the moonlight. The Gemara, now, for the moon to rise very early in the morning means that it was late in the month. At the beginning of the month, the moon rises at approximately the same time as the sun does, and it sets at approximately the same time the sun does as you go later and later in the month. Every day it rises later and later until you get to around the 20th or 25th of the month, and it's rising at 2 or 3 in the morning. So now, at one point, it did that. The Dimu Sheheir Mizr, they thought that it was sunrise. The Shachter was a Tomid, and a Shachter was a Tomid, and they shafted the Koman Tomid. And then when they realized their mistake, the Beis HaSnefer, they had to take it out to the place of burning of the Korbanos because it was possible because it had been shafted by night. Now, then the Mishnah continues with the Avodah of Yom Kippur. So the mission continues. Haridu, Kohen Gadol, Beis HaTevilah, they would now have the Kohen Gadol go down to the place where he's going to Tovel. He has to Tovel 5 times on Yom Kippur, and the first one of them is going to be before he shefts the Tomid, because of course the whole Avodah on the day of Yom Kippur, including the regular Avodahs that throughout the year are done by other Kohenim, on Yom Kippur they're done dafka by the Kohen Gadol. I think Mara points out over there, it's not a continuation of that story, because, again, Yom Kippur was early in the month. The story with the moon rising and them thinking that it was sunlight had to have been later in the month, so it's two different things. It's saying that one time they made that mistake, therefore in the future they set up this rule about somebody going onto the roof and then having this whole back and forth. Now, once they did that, when on Yom Kippur they did that and they checked that it was light enough in the sky, then they would have the Kohen Gadol Tovel and start the Avodah. And the Mishnah continues and gives a general rule about toiveling when it comes to doing the Avodah. Does that follow the Mishnah? There was a general rule in the Mishnah. Call him Mesa Chasudagov. Anybody who has to defecate, anybody who has to do gedolim, toiveling tevila, then before he wants to come in and do or resume the Avodah, he has to toivel in the Mishnah. But call him Mato Mayim, and anybody who urinates, toiveling Kiddush Adai Rav Lion, he has to wash his hands and feet from the kier before he resumes his Avodah. The Gemara deals with the exact details why that is. The point is, in other words, that Sahir, the Kohen Gadol, has to do with Tevila anyway before he does the Avodah, and that's also because, after all, during the night, before that, he would have gone to the back. So Teferis Yaakov points out that what does that have to do with all Gemara over here? And the point is that here he stayed. Gemara mentions in Yuma that the Kohen Gadol stayed up all night. They wouldn't allow him to fall asleep, so he doesn't become a Baal Keri. So why should he have to toivel? The answer is not because he woke up in the morning, but rather because he went to the bathroom. So now that we have all of that, now the Gemara says Tony Avur. Now, so we said in the course of this that when they shechted the Korban Tomid at night, then it would be possible. So Tony Avor the Rabbin, so the father of Rabbin, taught a Braisa in this connection, Lo Zubovad. This is not the only example where a Korban was shechted at night and the result is it's possible. El Afila, Ola Sa'oif, Nimuk of Alayla. Even an Ola Sa'oif, if the Malika was done at night, or Mincha, Shinikmets of Alayla, or if the Kormets of a Mincha was taken by night, take to the Beit HaSefer, then it also has to be taken out and burnt because it's also possible. So the Gemara asks why. The Shlema, Ola Sa'oif, I can understand why if an Ola Sa'oif was done by night, then you need to take it out and burn it, and it's a possible carbon. Mishum Deloy Afshalah Adurah, because you can't undo it. The point is, by the way, Tosfos points out, the Chiddush is that even though the Pasuk says, the Yom Zivchach, I'm on the day that you bring your Zevach, where Zevach means a shechted turban, these are not shechted. So you would think maybe they could be brought by night, but no, we have a different Pasuk, the Yom Savoiso, that they have to be brought by day as well. Tosfos also discusses, by the way, they're not going to be possible because they were done before the Korban Tomid, even though the Korban Tomid is supposed to be the first Korban of the day. That's only the mitzvah, not la'akev. What about Lina? So Tosfos discusses various things, why it might be done by night, why conceivably it would be possible. The answer is it's possible because all Korbanos have to be done during the day. So, Bishlema Ola Sa'oif, I can understand why the Ola Sa'oif Mishra B'lai Afshala Adura. You can't undo it. If the liquor was done, you can't be unmoilikah. Ela mincha, but why with a mincha? Why should we say it's possible and it has to be taken and burned because they did the kmitza by night? What's the problem? Epshin and Mihadra Komitz and Jukte, put back the Komitz into the place together with the rest of the mincha, the Komitz be a mama, and then do a new kmitza by day. What's the problem? The answer is the father of Rav Ovin had taught the Braisa, which brought up this problem, and he also answered, Klei Sharis Mekadshin Shalagizmanan. The answer is that Klei Sharis are able to be Mekadish things that are placed in them even outside of their proper time. Now, when you do the Klemets, you put it in a Klei Sharis. So having put it in a Klei Sharis at night, which is Shalagizmanan, that makes it kosher to the extent where, now you can't undo it. Now, the rest of the Minsa is Shirayim, and now you can't put this Klemets back in and then, and store it all over again. So therefore, so you have no choice but to burn the Minsa because it's possible. Well, the Gemara says, Meisni. I have a contradiction. A Braisa says, Kola Korav Bayoim, any korban that is brought by day, which is korbanus in general, Kodesh Bayoim, the Kodesh Bayoim. Then it will become Kodesh when it's placed in a Klei Sharis only by day. Balayla, when you have something which can be done by night, Rashi explains an example of that would be the Minchas Nisachim. We've learned before that even though the korban has to be brought by day, the Minchas Nisachim that's supposed to accompany it can be brought the following night. So that would be an example of something that can be brought by night. Tosfos brings another explanation. It means Atovas HaNevis. It means the preparation of the lamps of the menorah, which is done in the evening. However, Tosfos says that doesn't really seem to work because how could you use the word Korei for that? That's not really something that's awful. So you have that. Balayla, when you have something which is meant to be brought by night, Kodesh Balayla, then it can become Kodesh in a Klei Sharis by night. Bein Bayoim or Bein Balayla. If it's something that can be brought either by day or by night, again, for example, Minchas Nesachim, Kodesh Bein Bayoim or Bein Balayla, then it can become holy if you put it in a Klei Sharis by day or by night. Holy as far as that now it has. Kedushas HaGuf. And now, if Tavur Yoim touches it, it becomes possible. And if it's taken out of the Azara, it becomes possible. And if it becomes, and if it's left overnight, Lina, then it becomes possible, etc. Now, so the implication seems to be by Yoim Ein, Balai Laloi. When you have something, as a Kola Korda Bayim, Kodesh Bayim, when we're saying anything that's offered by day becomes Kodesh by day, implying by Yoim Ein, Balai Laloi, only by day, not by night. Now, a Mincha is something where all of the Avodis, if it has to be done by day. So how can Avur Derab Oven tell us that if you did the kmitzah by night and placed it in a Klei Sharis, then it becomes holy to the extent where now you can't put it back in with the mincha? Why? Based on this b'raisa, it seems that it should only become holy by day. So the answer is, ain't a kodesh likrav av a kodesh lifson. The answer is it won't become holy as far as actually being able to be offered on a mizbeach and make the rest of the korban kosher, but it does become kodesh to the extent where it can become possible. And therefore, so now you can't return it and put it back with the other shirayim, and the result is therefore that this mincha is possible and there's no way of undoing it. Now, mostly Reb Zeira, so now Reb Zeira says that I have a contradiction on all of this from our Mishnah. The Mishnah says, "Sidurus halachem v'asabazich and achol shaymus." If a person arranged the lachem upon him, if the kohen arranged the lachem upon him and the bazichin after Shabbos, sometime during the week, the hikdurus habazichin b'Shabbos. We have the third case of our Mishnah. He offered the bazichin the following Shabbos psula. Then it would be possible because that hasn't stayed on the shulchan long enough. Case of Yasa. So what should you do? You nechen al Shabbos haba, leave it on the shulchan until the following Shabbos. Shafilu hu al shulchan, shafilu hi al shulchan yomim nabim en matatlum. Even if it stays extra days on the shulchan, it doesn't matter. Now, the East of the Diabach, Klei Sharis, Mekadosh, and Shalai Bizmanon, if you're going to tell me that Klei Sharis are able to be Mekadosh, Kogonos, even outside of the proper time, to the extent where now it becomes possible, then the question is, Lifsel, Lifsel, Lifsel. So the question is, in that case, it should become holy to that extent by being placed on the Shulchan, but then it should be possible. Because, in other words, it wasn't, so in other words, what should happen, it was placed on the wrong time on the Shulchan, so it should become Kodesh already on Sunday, or whatever day of the week you put it on, when next Sunday comes, it should become possible, because it's now been there more than the amount of time it's supposed to be on the Shulchan. So the fact that we don't say that, the fact that we say that you put it on Sunday, and it doesn't matter, and it can remain there two Shabbosim in a row, seems to imply it doesn't become Kodesh by virtue of being placed in a Klei Sharis as long as it's outside the time. The time on the Shulchan is Mekadosh Lacham Abonim, specifically on Shabbos. Here you put it on there after Shabbos. Now, according to the Oven's father's rule, it should be that now it becomes Kodesh and the Lina clock starts ticking. Fine. Now, in the case of Lacham Abonim, the Lina clock takes 7 days, unlike most Korbanos where it's only overnight. But still, then when it comes the following Sunday, then Lina should kick in and it should be possible. The fact that not seems to imply not what he's saying, and the Klei Sharis are not Mekadosh even outside of their proper time. So, Gemara says, Amar Rav, Manda Kamoisiv, Shakur Kamoisiv. Well, the one who brought up this question has a very good point. It's true that our Mishnah seems to imply not like Rav Ovin's father's wool. However, Avur did Rav Ovin Nami Masnisa Karma. However, you should know, Rav Ovin's father is teaching a Braisa, if not after all his own Svara. So if it was his own Svara, you could say, look, he's an Amora. You could say he's an Amora and he's contradicted by the Mishnah. But the Ritzvah and the relevant Gemara and Yuma adds that look, you know, the father of Rav Ovin says Rava, we can rely on him. He's not going to bring in a wrong Braisa into the Mishnah. If he quoted this Braisa, he must know that it's accurate. Well, then how does he reconcile it with the Mishnah? The answer is Laila in Mechusas Man. The answer is Kosava Laila in Mechusas Man. The Tana of the Braisa holds that the night before is not considered Mechusas Man because. When it comes to Kodshin, we have the day and then the night, unlike when it comes to all other areas in Halacha, where we have the night first by Yer by Yivot. By Kodshin, it's the other way around. So in other words, the night for this purpose is already considered. The other way around. And the night is the beginning of the following day. Usually, as far as Kodshim, we say the night follows the day, but here we're saying that the night is considered to be part of the next day already. So therefore, now it's like this. When it comes to the mincha, we're talking about he put the koyments in a kli shoris by night, and it's about to be the next day. So that's considered already that he did it by day. So even though nighttime is not a time for korbanos, nevertheless, the fact that it's already the night that belongs to this day makes it that now it becomes kodesh only as far as that it has to literally go, but it's possible to actually offer on the mizbeach. As opposed to here, we're talking about har yamim, the chasarim zman, but here we're talking about days before you put the lachan upon him on Sunday or Monday or whatever day of the week. That was days before. Those days have nothing to do with, in a direct way with the following Shabbos. Therefore, we can't say that they became Kaddish at all. So when did they first become Kaddish? On Shabbos. Fine. So they become Kaddish on Shabbos as if they were first placed on the Shulchan on Shabbos and they stay there until the following Shabbos and we're good. We ignore the fact that it was on there for a few days before that. Well, the Gemara asks, soif. So the days before will be considered Mechusas Man. So therefore, it doesn't become Kaddish yet until Shabbos. Well, the Gemara asks, soif. Kimati Leoya the Beit Shimshi. Fine, but when it comes Friday night, Likdush for Lipsal. At that point, it should become Kaddish and become Possel because it was placed on the Shulchan. In effect, we're going to say that it was placed on the Shulchan at night. And it can't. It's supposed to be placed on the Shulchan by day. So in other words, the idea is it's supposed to be on there parts of 8 days. It's supposed to be, you put it on there, let's say Shabbos morning, and you take it off the following Shabbos morning. So you have part of Shabbos, Parshas Achrei Mos Kedoshim, then you have 6 more days a week, and then you have part of the following Shabbos of Parshas Emor. But here we have that you put it, so it's supposed to be 8 days and 7 nights. Here you have it's there for 8 nights. So again, it should become possible the following Friday night. The word Beit Shimshi, by the way, literally means Bein HaShmoshes. So it could mean any Bein HaShmoshes of any of the other days in the week, and actually in other places in Shas mentions that the word Beit Shimshi was used as a nickname specifically for Friday night. Because other days, if something happens, Bein HaShmoshes, when Bein HaShmoshes is not really so negated. It would be, for example, if a boy was born, Bein HaShmoshes, then you have a question what day is Beit Shimshi. But ordinarily, it doesn't make much of a difference on a day-to-day basis. But Friday, there's a huge difference between Friday and Shabbos, so therefore Bein HaShmoshes, Beit Shimshi, came to be used as a nickname for Friday night. So now you could argue when it comes Friday night, Layla de Beishimshi, Likdash, at that point it should become Kaddish because you're saying Layla is not Mechusas Man. Friday night is already considered an introduction to Shabbos, the Lipsal, and then at that point it should become Possel on Friday night, on the next Friday night because of Lina, because now it was there 8 nights. Omar Rava Vishakodim Masila. So Rava says, fine, you'd have to be talking about where you took off the Lacham Aponim before Bein HaShmoshes. So in other words, in our scenario, let's say the Lacham Aponim was placed there today, Tuesday, of Parshas Achrei Mos Kedoshim. So Rava is saying, you would have to say, in order for it to not be a problem, it would be on there until Friday. Friday before Shabbos begins, Kohen would come in and take off the Lacham Aponim, make sure it's not on there on Friday night, and then Shabbos morning, he would put it back, and everything would continue from there. But you're right, Rava is saying if you were to leave it there on Friday night of Parshas Achrei Mos Kedoshim, then it would in fact become possel when it comes Friday night of Parshas Emor. Mazutra, the attainment of Ashi. I'm a Mazutra. Some say that Ashi gives a different answer. After the attainment, Shaloi caught him a silik. You don't even need to say that he took it off the Shulchan. Kivin to Sidra, Shaloi Kimitzvase, because he put it on, not according to its mitzvah, not at the proper time, Nasa Kimishi Sidra Koyf, in effect, we can consider it as though it was placed there by a monkey. In other words, to put it in modern terms, we would say as though it was placed there by a robot, for example. So in other words, it's not considered to have been placed there at all. So it's not going to become Kaddish because you put it over there. So therefore, when it comes Shabbos, then it would in fact be considered as though it was placed there now, what it was there until now. So therefore, it only becomes Kaddish Bizmanoi, which is when it comes Shabbos. So the Shulchan wouldn't be Mekadosh it, even Bizmanoi. The Koimetz, on the other hand, would be considered, Rashi points out, would be considered to mitzvasei. Now, Rashi elsewhere in Masechta Yoma, where it brings this whole discussion, Rashi learns over there that in fact would require that a Koyan is going to come there on Shabbos and take off the Lechem Aponim and put it on, because again, if it was put there by a monkey or a robot or whatever, then in effect there's no way that it could become Kaddish, because how could it then in that case? Then in that case, there's nobody putting it on the Shulchan, and in that case, there's no way that it would be able to become kosher. So it would have to be like that. On the other hand, the Rambam doesn't mention that point. The Rambam just says you leave them on the Shulchan, and they remain there on the Shulchan on Shabbos, and then you offer the bezichon the following Shabbos. So the Rambam is not concerned about the point that it's considered, as Gemara is saying over here, it's as if, so to speak, it was put there by a monkey, meaning it wasn't properly put there, but nevertheless, the Rambam is not bothered by the fact that it was placed there improperly, as long as it was there, Shabbos morning, then automatically it becomes Kaddish, and you don't need anything further. Okay. So that explains then how that could work if the Lechem Aponim was placed there in the middle of the week. Okay. The Mishnah says, Shtei Alechem, in Necholos, the Shtei Alechem, now we learned before about this Machloikas, whether the Shtei Alechem and the Lechem upon him can be baked on Yom Tov or not. So basically the question we said boiled down to, is the oven that they're baked in, a Kli Shoreis, such that they would become possible by Lina by being left overnight? Because again, only the Lechem upon him has a longer Lina cloth on the Shulchan of 7 days, everything else has a Lina cloth of only overnight. So if you say the Lechem Aponim and the Shnei Lechem become Kaddish when they're baked in the oven, then they have to be put on the Shulchan, or they have to be offered together with the Shnei Kvasim on the same day they were baked, otherwise they become possible by Lina. If you say that the oven was not a sweet charis, then they have to be baked before. And in fact, we learned earlier in the parak that in that case they can't be baked on Shabbos or Yom Tov, because then it's something that's not dirt for Shabbos, because it could have been done before Shabbos. So following that opinion, and the Gemara says the Mishnah says Shtei Alechem now call us Ein Tofas Mishnayim V'lo Yosal Shloisha. The Lechem Aponim are going to be eaten no earlier than the second day, the day after they were baked, and no later than the third day after they were baked. So including the day that they were baked themselves. Ketzad, what does that mean? Nefes me'erev Yom Tov. Normally they're baked on Erev Yom Tov and Nefos, the Yom Tov Mishnayim, and they're eaten the next day, which is the one day of Shavuos in Eretz Yisrael. But I'm told, after all, Shavuos is only one day. So they're baked on Erev Shavuos, let's say, hey Sivan, and they're eaten the following day, Vav Sivan. So therefore, then they'd be eaten on the next day. Suppose that Shavuos comes out on Sunday, then they would be eaten on the third day, because then they'd be baked on Friday, and then you have Friday, Shabbos, and Sunday. So we don't mean, obviously, three full days, we mean parts of 3 days. Lechem Aponim, Nechol, in Potsim Tisha, Yosel Achados. The Lechem Aponim is eaten no less than 9 days from when it's baked, and no more than 11. Kate said, how does that work out? We find, by the way, in Parshas Emor, when it says about when they have the Ben Isha Israelis from Ish Mitzri, who cursed Hashem and was executed for that. So Rashi mentions over there one of the things that he was making fun of right before that. You have the section about the Lechem Aponim, the Lakach the Solus. So Rashi mentions over there the Medrash that the one explanation of what he was mocking in the first place that led him to curse Hashem is he was saying how he talking that we would serve Hashem stale bread that's 9 days old. He didn't realize that there was a nest we learned about before, that it would stay fresh, and besides, Hashem himself doesn't eat the Lechem Aponim, etc. But yeah, anyway. So it was no less than 9 and no more than 11. Ketzad, what does that mean? Nefem Erev Shabbos for Nechem Shabbos. Normally, it would be baked on Erev Shabbos and eaten the following Shabbos for Tisha, and therefore you have 9 days. So parts of 9 days, that is to say. So in other words, so let's say, for example, there would be baked this week, Friday, Parshas Achrim is Kedoshim, and then it's eaten the following Shabbos, Parshas Emor. So you have Friday Shabbos, and then you have 7 days, and the following week makes nine. How Yom Tov Elias Erev Shabbos, if Yom Tov comes out on Erev Shabbos, and then you can't bake it on Yom Tov either, so therefore Nechal HaSod, and then they have to bake it on Thursday, Erev Yom Tov, and therefore it would be eaten on the 10th day from when it was made. Now, an interesting question is, why? And the lechem aponim and the shtei lechem are eaten by the kohenim, after all. So, and we know that melechas tochel nefesh is allowed on Yom Tov. So why shouldn't they be able to make it on Yom Tov? So there's a few different explanations. First of all, you have a discussion about it in the Gemara in Beitza. Not in Beitza, but in Pesachim. The idea is you have Rav Chista in a Gemara in Pesachim holds, even though you're allowed to do Melechus Eichel Nefesh on Yom Tov, that would only be Lachem. The Pesach is Vulavadi, also Lachem. Melechus can be done on Yom Tov for your purposes, meaning not Legavoya, not for Hashem, except obviously things that have to be done on Shabbos or Yom Tov themselves. So therefore, it's considered Legavoya, because in other words, it's considered for Hashem, and then it's just being given to the Kohen. The Kohen and Meshulchan Gavoya Kazachu is the Gemara phrase that elsewhere, that the Kohen are getting a portion from Hashem's table, but essentially it belongs to Hashem. Now you have another opinion over there in that Gemara Pesachim. Rabba holds that no, that it would be mutter, but the problem is you can only bake bread on Yom Tov only if you can eat it right away after it was made, only right after it was made. But here, so for example, you can bake bread on Yom Tov, even if you already ate your Yom Tov meal, fine, because Orchin might show up unexpectedly, and you want to have fresh bread to give. But the problem is over here that you can't eat the Shtei Lechem and the Lechem Aponim right away. The Shtei Lechem Aponim, certainly not, you have to leave it for a whole week. But even the Shtei Lechem, you have to first shecht the Shnei Kvasim and sprinkle their blood, and therefore Rabba says that's a different reason why you can't bake them on Yom Tov. But certainly as far as the lachem aponim, where you're not eating it that day, you're eating it only the following week, then certainly according to that way of looking at it, there's no hetter to bake it on Yom Tov. Therefore, you have to bake it on Thursday, Erev Yom Tov. So then you have Thursday, Friday, Shabbos, and the entire following week. So that brings you to 10 days. What if the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah fall out on Thursday and Friday? So then, Nechal Achadosa, then you have to bake it on Wednesday, which is Erev Rosh Hashanah, and then you're going to eat it the following Shabbos. So then you have Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos, and the entire following week. Now Rashi points out that, wait a minute then, if Rosh Hashanah is Thursday and Friday, then that means that means Yom Kippur is going to be on Shabbos. So therefore, when are they going to be able to eat it? They can't eat it on Yom Kippur itself. As we learned a couple of Mishnayos ago, they're going to have to eat on Motzei Yom Kippur. That's already, Lahalacha, we said the night is before the day, so that's already considered Sunday. So then that would be the 12th day. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos, the entire week makes 11, and Sunday, which is to say Motzei Shabbos, would be the 12th day. Rashi says that no, because when it comes to Kodshim, again, the night follows the day. So in other words, when it comes to purposes of Kodshim, we consider Motzei Shabbos to be part of the same day as Shabbos. Therefore, it's still only the 11th day and not the 12th. So that's the point of Rashi. Tosfos gets into a discussion of it and says that no, because actually like this, when we talk about 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, so we're used to that the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah are the first and the second of Tishrei. But is it in fact so? Tosfos points out the whole reason to have 2 days of for Chutzlar, it's of course we have 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, same as we have 2 days of every other Yom Tov. Now Rashi, by the way, elsewhere points out we can't talk about 2 days of any other Yom Tov. They don't have 2 days in Eretz Yisrael, so the only one would be Rosh Hashanah. But anyway, Tosfos points out that when they were Makadosh al Pi Ariyah, if they had to have 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, why would it be? It's because they were expecting Adim to come on the 30th of the previous month. And in other words, the moon should have been visible on the night after the 29th, on the evening after the 29th, and Adim would come the next day, the 30th, and then there would be Makadosh the 30th, and say that Elul was 29 days, and today is Rosh Hashanah. The Gemara tells us, in the Mishnah, the Gemara tells us in Rosh Hashanah, that if Adim didn't come before Mincha, before the Talmud Shoben HaBayim, then in order to avoid the problem of, well, what do? Do we bring the Talmud? Do we bring the Musaf? What do we do exactly? And what do we do as far as the Shira? So then the Chacham made a takana that we accept the Edim only until the time of the Talmud Shoben HaBayim. If they came later than that, then we consider that we have 2 days Rosh Hashanah. We keep that day as Kodesh, but then the next day is the real Rosh Hashanah. Well, then it comes out, says Tosfos, that In that case, it's not really the first and second of Tishrei as we have it nowadays. It would actually be the 30th of Elul and the first of Tishrei. Well, very well then. If Friday is the first of Tishrei, then Shabbos is the second of Tishrei. The following Shabbos is the 9th of Tishrei. It's not Yom Kippur. It's Erev Yom Kippur. So therefore, so there's no problem with that. Now, they would try to avoid that when possible. We learned before, you don't want to have Yom Kippur and Shabbos adjacent to one another because it would cause hardships, but nevertheless, they will do that when they have to. So therefore, so there's not a problem that they're going to end up eating it. Where are they going to eat it? On Yom Kippur? Because if not, it's going to be Erev Yom Kippur. So therefore, they can do that. And Tosfos discusses, in fact, so now the result is so in other words, the idea would be that so they would make Lachem Aponim on Wednesday to be on the safe side. If the first day Rosh Hashanah is supposed to be on Thursday, so now they don't know is it going to end up being Thursday only or Thursday and Friday. So they would make Lachem Aponim on Wednesday to be on the safe side, and then if it turns out that Friday was not in fact Yom Kippur, it turns out Adam did show up on Thursday, then that's the one day of Rosh Hashanah. Friday is a weekday, and then they can make new Lachem Aponim on that Friday, and they can be part of the old one because then become Kodesh Yom. So therefore you can do that. Tosfos also points out though, again, Yom Kippur is really not supposed to fall on Sunday. But there are opinions that they can do that even Mahatchila, and apparently again the idea is over here with Bidiyah that they needed to and they don't have much of a choice, then that's how it's gonna be. So the Mishnah continues, the Enid Doicha Lois Shabbos Lois Yom Tov. Now, so then the baking of the Shtei Lechem is not Doicha Shabbos or Yom Tov, which is why we're saying you have to make it on Erev Shabbos or Erev Yom Tov or Erev Rosh Hashanah, as the case may be. Reb Shimon Gamliel, but on the other hand, Reb Shimon Gamliel says, in the name of Reb Shimon Askan, no, that's not so. Doiches Yom Tov, it does override Yom Tov, because again, Mela doesn't override Shabbos because you can't bake on Shabbos, but Yom Tov, you're allowed to do Malachas Eichel Nefesh after all, and therefore you're allowed to. So again, you have the different opinions of Rav Huna and Rav Chista, of Rabba and Rav Chista about this. Can we say that something that needs to be done on Shabbos, something that needs to be written on Shabbos, can be made on Yom Tov, Daraisa, and then we would say that it's more to, even if it's not really right away. So he would say, Dorcha Yom Tov, Vein Dorcha, it's Yom Tsoi, but it wouldn't override Yom Kippur. So he says, if Yom Kippur comes out on Friday, then you're right, you can't make the Lachem upon him then, you would have to make it Thursday. But according to him, in other words, even if Rosh Hashanah is Thursday and Friday, no problem, you can bake the Lachem upon him on Friday and eat it the following Shabbos. Well, the Gemara says in this connection, so we have a Machlokas in the same vein about whether you can bring Nedarim or Nedavos on Yom Tov. You have Korbanos that you made a Neder or Nedavah to bring. Are you allowed to bring them on Yom Tov? So again, one way of looking at it is that you can bring at least Shlomim because you're going to eat them. Another way of looking at it is that no, because again, then those are basically for the needs of Hashem and not Lochem, not for you. So I'm going to be now. So they're going to relate that Machlokas to him. The Divrei Omen Nedarim or Nedavos ain't Krav Yom Tov. The opinion that said that you can't also that you can't offer Nedarim or Nedavos on Yom Tov, loy tema midaraisa mechazapazu. Don't think that midaraisa they would be suitable to bring, but Rabbanan who degazu, and it's only that Rabbanan made a zera not to bring them on Yom Tov, shala yasha, that a person should not delay his korbanos. In other words, what's going to happen? You know, a person throughout the year has made Nedarim or Nedavos. Now, if you allow him to bring on Yom Tov, and he has to come on Yom Tov for Aliyah L'Regel anyway, so he may. So he may delay them until Yom Tov, and then it comes out that he's now you're going to say then we don't want him to be deliberately delaying Malacha until Yom Tov, until Chol HaMoed, so therefore so, and then we don't want him to wait with eating them until Chol HaMoed, so therefore maybe we make a zera that he shouldn't bring them on Yom Tov. Or the other explanation Rashi says is he might be over on Baal Ta'achar if he doesn't end up bringing them not Yom Tov, he may be over on Baal Ta'achar if he leaves them more than a certain number of Yom Tov. So don't think that the whole thing is only exeded to Rabbanan Ella, but rather Ravina says Midaraisa Nami Lechazu. You should know that according to that opinion Midaraisa you can't bring such Korbanas on Yom Tov. Why? Because here we see in our Mishnah the Shtei Lechem are something that has to be brought that day on Shavuos, and there's no problem he might delay them because they have to be brought on Shavuos. And nevertheless, the Mishnah said the Katani, and yet the Mishnah says Ein Adoicha Lois Shabbos Lois Yom Tov. They don't override Shabbos and Yom Tov. So we see that even the Shtei Lechem, which are required to be brought on Yom Tov, they're still not Doicha, Shabbos or Yom Tov, according to the Tanna Kamma. So therefore, so we can learn from that, that the opinion that says that Nedarim and Nedavos are not also on Yom Tov would be for the same reason it's actually Daraisa, it cannot be done. They would have to be brought then during Chol HaMoed. Adron Alach Shleilach.